Welcome to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Coplin. Featuring out and about, thought-provoking conversations on the street. We consider topics with local relevance and global significance. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Coplin.
Welcome to the show where we balance the intellectual with the creative and explore whether we have more in common than divides us through thought-provoking conversations. For the Arts Hour, I feature in-depth interviews with local, national and international guests from all areas of the arts. And for this, the topic hour, I go out and about and talk to people on the street about a wide variety of different subjects that affect all of us, both locally and globally. And the show combines a debate topic with an arts interview because I feel discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways we engage with the world. If you'd like more information about the show, please go to the website, itsaquestionofbalance.com. You can find out more about the show, about me. There's lots of photographs. You can hear podcasts of all my past shows there. We've got a very wide selection of topics that we've covered and also some wonderful guests. And you can also connect with me on social media, should you wish, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, etc. So I encourage you to do that. It's a question of balance.com. And as I mentioned, we have a topic hour and a guest hour. There's two tabs at the top of the homepage on the website, guests and topics. If you click on the guests, it brings up all the photos and names of previous guests. And on the topics page, it brings up all the topic questions and photographs. You just click on something that takes your fancy, takes you straight to the podcast page where there's photographs, information, links to relevant websites, and also the audio of the podcast that you can then listen to at your leisure. Right now on It's a Question of Balance, we're featuring out and about, the thought-provoking, hopefully, conversations on the street. And in out and about, we're considering topics that affect us locally, but that also do have a global significance that affect all humans. And the idea is to get us thinking about the questions that do affect us all and to try and stimulate some new thinking or maybe clarify what we already feel, to hear other people's opinions, which may be different or similar to our own. And this week we're considering, does it have to be them and us? This topic came to me, I guess, because just sort of reflecting on various events around America and the world, that there's a lot of feeling about them and us. And it's in all sort of areas. It's so easy to feel sort of them and us, whether it be the police and citizens, whether it be transgender people and non-transgender, whether it be immigrants, whether it be the old and the young, rich, poor, that there's so many differences where we can really feel, it is about them and us. And I think that that's something I wanted to reflect on and talk to people about. Is that something they're experiencing in their lives? How does it affect them? And also how they think about other people and how they think about themselves. So anyway, that's our topic this week. And the first person that I spoke to was Tom. So let's hear what he had to say. Hi, my name's Ruth Coplin from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What is your name?
My name is Tom.
Well, hi, Tom. Thanks so much for stopping for our Out and About feature. This week, we're asking, does it have to be them and us? There's lots of ways we can find ourselves thinking in terms of them and us, young and old, rich and poor, healthy versus not taking care of yourself, right-wing versus liberal, gay and straight, black and white, first world, third world, a lot of different ways. I'm wondering, do you ever find yourself feeling very different from another group of people, and how does that make you feel?
Oh, wow, that's a really tough question. I think being like an ethnic minority in the U.S. sort of is, that's sort of the daily experience. Uh-huh. And I just went on vacation to Portugal. I know I have a lot of first world problems, but, and you know, it can be like after leaving California, which is, you know, very diverse, and just to go to Portugal, walking around and have people's assumptions about you being Asian American. And I mean, that's definitely the feeling of, you know, that I felt that experience of, you know, I'm us and they're them and whatnot.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. When you feel passionate about an issue, how do you feel about the people who disagree with you? Do you see it as two sides, a wrong and a right, or simply as a kind of variety of views and beliefs?
Wow, these are
sorry,
questions.
This is a deep show, yes.
I mean, I think both, and I know that's. I hope that's not a cop out,
no,
but
yeah.
You know, I do think that, you know, we all are allowed to have, of course, our perspective on it, that lays on some continuum of extreme to the other extreme. But you know, I think a lot of my own decision making, a lot of my own values are rooted in what I think is right, and you know, it stems from a moral core. So I mean, you know, I do think I'm right when I'm right, but
yes.
You know, I understand if people disagree. I try to understand where people are coming from, but at the end of the day, you have to stick to, you know, what resonates with your moral core.
Right. When we think sort of them and us, it ignores complexity. So I'm wondering if part of why it appeals to us is a craving for simplicity. You know, if we think we're right and our view should just kind of crush the opposition, rather than having to try and deeply consider their views. Do you think that's part of it, that we just want things to be simple? It's just easier to think we're right about things?
That makes sense to me. I mean, I think that if you situate this question, though, within like a broader like American context versus, you know, in terms of our political system, for example, I mean, I just think that wherever there's more diversity of thought and more extremely different views on polarizing views, it's going to create more conflict. So I think that's part of the problem that we're in today. Things are just gotten so polarized politically, economically, that middle ground is elusive. So you know, I think it's a little more complicated than just craving simplicity. I think it's about just the level of extremity in today's day and age, and on all these different kind of domains of politics and economics and whatnot.
I'm wondering how it would be, you mentioned values earlier, if we focused more on values rather than behaviors and beliefs. Do you think that would feel like we're less different then?
No. Okay. I think values is used as sort of an argument, and everyone—it's like family values, for example, which is such a loaded word in America, right?
Yeah.
And so values is actually used as like a tool to sort of create opposition in some ways. I think the way we've sort of—I mean, that's not how I'm using the word values.
It's more sort of about morality.
Yeah,
perhaps.
It gets to be, and then people twist values and their definition of values in order to suit their own argumentative purposes, right?
Yeah.
So I think that it's less about that. I think part of it, in my view, is why things are so polarized in general. And politically, economically, all these different dimensions, is that, you know, we have more and more segregation in this country economically and racially. And so, I mean, we don't really interact with people different than us on a daily basis. And I think that the thing is that people who have very different views from each other, if they interact, I think they're more likely to sort, if they know the person and they have a day-to-day interaction that's friendly, they're more than likely to accept other people's views than to, like, automatically throw them under the bus and say that they're evil.
Yeah. I suppose why I was mentioning values is, like, an example would be if you think about how to deal with people who are poor. You might get a right-wing view that they should pull themselves up by their bootstraps, you know, and a more left-wing view would be, well, they need some supportive programs to help them get out of where they are. But maybe you could say that the value behind that is still compassion, perhaps. You know, those are still both coming from a place of wanting to help those people. They just have very different ways and beliefs of thinking they should be helped. So that's where I'm wondering, if we think of values like that, whether that could help to sort of drop down from us feeling so different. I mean, I'm interested in what you're saying
about integrating
more, but how would that happen if we're still feeling so different?
Well, I mean, I think that the issue of compassion. I mean, compassion really doesn't do anything to help people. I mean, it's just, at the end of the day, I mean, it's a good value.
It motivates.
It can motivate and whatnot, but it doesn't really, you know, feed people or change people's lives in a real kind of material level, right? So, I mean, I think, if you live in a more integrative, pluralistic society where you're really, like, connecting with people who are different than you, and, I mean, look at Santa Cruz, it's like everyone's sort of politically the same or within a very tight band of politically or whatnot. So, yeah. But that's changed. I mean, it's getting more and more polarized in this country. So, I mean, the more interaction you have with people different than you, I think that it tends to breed more compassion because this is a thesis.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's
hypothetical. But
oh, yeah.
So I think I think compassion is not necessarily the issue at hand. It's a byproduct of.
I mean, I was using that as an example, how, you know, values motivate behaviors. And sometimes the behaviors can be really different and they can come from the same motivating value. That was the example I was trying to give. So that, you can look at something that people are behaving so differently and you think, wow, I have nothing in common with them. But if you could kind of drop down from the behavior and the belief to what motivated it, then you think, oh, well, maybe actually I don't agree with how they are trying to do whatever, but I can see that why they're trying to do it is actually similar to how I feel.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to explain.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
I mean, do you have any thoughts on how we could, I mean, you're saying integrate more, but how could we help with that?
Oh, I think all these problems are just so deeply systemic in America, and I don't have any solutions. But I mean,
Maybe bringing them out and talking about them is one way, you know, because I think perhaps when you bring things into consciousness, then they're to be considered. And
sure. Forms for that would be great. Okay.
Well, I really appreciate your opinion.
Thank you so much. Yeah,
thank you.
And when can I listen to this?
It's going to be on tonight, and then it'll be podcasted probably from tomorrow.
Well, there you are. You're on right now. So thanks there to Tom. And you're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. Right now we're featuring Out and About, thought-provoking conversations on the street. And if you have any thoughts about our topic discussion, do email me, ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. I'm always interested to hear your thoughts. That's the way you can kind of get in on this conversation and give your ideas. So again, my email is ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. We're going to go to a break now, but I'll be back with more conversations after these messages.
Like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com.
About you in the rain. Did I or didn't I say it's forever? Well, I know I said it, babe, it just goes nowhere.
It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com. Santa Cruz artist Doreen Davis states, "I become one with the essence of nature. This process puts me in touch with the soul of all living things." Owners of Doreen's beautiful paintings can vouch for this truth. Gazing at a painting by Doreen Davis simultaneously enlivens and soothes the soul. Working predominantly in watercolor, but also in acrylic and oil, Doreen's floral and landscape paintings have appeared in many exhibitions and are in private collections throughout the United States, in England, and in Germany. Her paintings are on display online at DoreenDavis.com and experience the visual delight of being at one with nature through her paintings.
I'm Casey, and I'm the second-generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore, and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. And in the break there, we heard from Bookshop Santa Cruz, which is actually celebrating its 50th anniversary this year, which is quite amazing, I think, really. So congratulations to them. 50 years surviving all the vagaries of the book publishing industry, which all of that has been very up in the air the last few years, so it's great still to have a wonderful independent bookstore in our area. And wherever you're listening, I hope you have one still too. But anyway, congratulations to Bookshop Santa Cruz on their 50th anniversary. And I wanted to remind you that they have a range of wonderful events coming up. They do all different kinds of author events, including an off-site event for the launch of the book Born for This. And this book is written by Chris Guillebeau. I think that's the way you pronounce it. It's spelled G-U-I-L-L-E-B-E-A-U. Obviously a French extraction, the name at least. So Chris Guillebeau, the best-selling author of The $100 Startup. And his new book, Born for This, is a practical, actionable guide that can help you turn your passion into paychecks, whether within a traditional company or business or by striking out on your own. So if you've always fancied making a living doing what you love and you're not already doing that, this might be one for you. That's on the 17th of May at 6:30 p.m. So that's coming up. And there's a whole host of other events that Bookshop Santa Cruz is running. So there's probably something for everybody there. There's some good children's events coming up and lots of different authors of different books, but all of them of a very high caliber, and you get to meet them in person and ask questions, etc. So you can find out more information about this and all the other wonderful upcoming events at bookshopsantacruz.com. So I said earlier that It's a Question of Balance has a topic hour and a guest hour, and right now we're featuring Out and About, which is our sort of topic hour, where we go out and have conversations on the street. And the idea is that it's going to make us have a think about something that perhaps we weren't thinking about before. And I'm always really grateful to the people who stop and talk to me, because as the first person that I interviewed mentioned, it is pretty deep, some of the stuff that I'm asking people. And, you know, people are just strolling along and shopping or just going out for lunch or whatever. there, and I'm always very grateful that they take the time to ponder on what are quite thought-provoking questions, and to really think about it and give their ideas. So thank you to everyone who takes part. And my next conversation was with Jay and Molly, and it was exceptionally windy. It was a bit challenging, so there is a little bit of wind noise at the beginning. We did have mic covers and sort of baffles and things like that, and we moved. So it really is only at the beginning that there is a bit of wind noise, but we powered through anyway. So let's hear what Jay and Molly had to say.
Hi, my name's Ruth Coplin from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
I'm Jay.
I'm Molly.
Well, Jay and Molly, thanks so much for stopping for our Out and About feature. This week we're thinking about, does it have to be them and us? There's lots of ways we can find ourselves thinking in terms of them and us, whether it's politically or about age or wealth or even health and how some people take care of themselves, some people don't, you know, gay, straight, black, white, first world, third world. I'm wondering, do you ever find yourself feeling very different from a certain group of people, and how does that make you feel, if you do?
That's a very big question.
Yeah.
I mean, of course I feel different from some other group of people that I'm not different from. Like, I'm a woman versus a man.
Yes.
And I'm a Chinese versus an American. So, yeah, I do feel like that.
So when you feel like that, mm-hmm. does it create a feeling of them and us, or do you just feel different but it's still part of a greater kind of community, if you like?
I mean, when there are differences, you feel the difference. When you're the same thing, you feel the similarity.
I mean, I don't know if it's something that's mutually exclusive. I think it's, I mean, you can feel both of them, and you're kind of being tugged constantly in either direction. I mean, I think there's advantages to both, right? If you generate a us and them, it's a lot easier to rally people around a cause.
Right.
Whereas, I mean, ultimately, I think for conversation, it's much better to have a more holistic idea of, you know, we're all a part of this larger community.
Yes.
And it's kind of the combination of those two that's really what drives progress.
Right.
I guess it could... Oh, sorry.
Yeah. No, I want to add that sometimes, like, stressing the difference will just kind of make the conversation interesting. Because otherwise, how would you kind of think about you yourself as the way you are without thinking about the alternative?
Right.
You know, like, the comparison makes things more interesting.
Right, yeah. That's a good point. In an article by Robert W. Peck of the Constitution Party, he states, in a world with an us versus them mentality, it's always them that are the problem, right? We're never the cause of our own troubles. That would be unthinkable. It's always the other guy who files everything up. We are innocent. If only the whole world were left to us, it would be a utopian paradise. The same phenomenon exists in the political arena, where the us versus them mentality finds that it's always the other political party that is the problem. You name the trouble, the other party caused it, whether we're talking Democrat versus Republican, left, right, liberal, conservative. One thing is certain, the other side is the root of all evil. If only the country were turned over to our side, to our favored ism or political party, we would make it a utopian paradise. The country feels particularly divided right now, as there are gaping divisions even within the two parties. So I'm wondering, in the political arena, are you finding yourself feeling a sense of them and us, you know, for your own beliefs and other people's?
I mean, I guess I see that argument going on, and I think it's a rallying cry around the base.
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of look at politics today, and it seems like the two political parties, at least in the United States, aren't really trying to pick up the center. What they're really trying to do is just motivate their base. And the idea is that, you know, screw the center, let's focus on rallying our specific constituencies with the hope that we can get more of our constituency out than the other side can.
So with your own beliefs, do you see different political beliefs as people just holding different views? Or do you sort of feel, I know this is quite an honest question to answer, do you feel your views are superior and that the other side should be converted to what you think?
No. No. I mean, I'm wrong all the time. I mean, the idea is that, you know, by having an argument, by having a conversation, the faults in your argument should become apparent. And I think that discourse is necessary for that.
Right.
I mean, as we're both scientists, so it's like, I mean, the whole peer review process is designed to constantly be identifying, you know, the flaws in your logic and areas which you might not, or data that you might not have considered.
Right.
So I don't think that, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like to me, a lot of the ideologies are not like externally imposed on me. For example, like, you know, I'm from China. There's a totalitarian government, and that's not me. I mean, I didn't, you know, I didn't create it, and I didn't choose to have that system going on. So, and same thing in like U.S. There are two parties you can pick from, and there are only two. And even though you might agree with like one of them, and then in some ways but not that, but you can only pick one of them. So it's pretty much like externally imposed thing. You have to pick. You have to identify as like, this is me or this is not me. Mm. And that, like, that's very rigid, and it's not like, it's not how we work, because we are very complex and we think different things and stuff like that.
Previously on the show, I've considered how embodying political beliefs affects how we relate to one another, because I don't know about China, but in Britain, people won't say, I'm a liberal, I'm a conservative. We would say, I support the liberals or the conservatives. In America, it's very common to say, I am a Democrat, I am a Republican, I am a libertarian, whatever it is. So we're really embodying that belief. It's like who we are. So what, one of the aspects of that is that what you're saying, we may hold a range of views, but if we need to self-identify in one camp or another, we may focus on or defend only the views that allow us to stay in that camp. So I'm wondering whether you see that at all, and whether you think that contributes us to this them and us also, because it doesn't allow for complexity. And it can also make you feel more attacked too, because if you feel it more as part of who you are, then if someone doesn't agree with you, it feels like a personal attack rather than just, oh, I have a different opinion to you.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. It's just something I've thought about before and noticed, because I'm a dual citizen, and so I've had the experience of both. And is that something you've ever thought about even?
Well, again, as a Chinese, I feel like there's the Chinese identity, where you collectively have the same pretty much personality or like views, and if one of you is attacked, and you will feel attacked as a whole, as the Chinese group.
Right.
I feel like this similar thing happens to like Democratic and Republican Party, where, you know, if one of your views attacked, or one another Democratic view is attacked, you will feel attacked as a person. So it's like taking things personally when you're just pretty much agreeing with part of it, and then, but once you take up that whole identity, you'd be like, everything about it is me, and I don't want to get attacked at all.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting thing. It's just like how human psychology works, where you just take up something as your own and like protect it, like kind of unreasonably, irrationally.
Right.
Yeah.
Joseph Joubert said that the aim of argument or discussion should not be victory, but progress. And I'm wondering if this is part of what gets lost when we're in a them and us mindset, you know, where you become more focused on converting people to our way of thinking rather than concentrating energy on how actual progress could be affected. Do you see that happening at all? I mean, is that part of the problem, do you think, that we are not very focused on progress? We're defending positions that come from this feeling of difference, you know?
I guess I don't know. I mean, I think you do see the presence of what you're describing. Although, I mean, I think there's the call within the larger American public for more constructive discourse.
Right, yes. That's what you were speaking to earlier. It's almost like we're having something imposed on us, whereas the majority perhaps want something different.
I mean, I don't know if it's the majority.
No, maybe not. They'd have to be, I guess they'd have to be very passive if it is the majority.
Yeah, it's... I'm not sure what's going on, I guess.
Yeah.
I think it could be a ton of things. It could be the way that narratives are presented in the media.
Yeah.
It could also be what politicians are willing to talk to the media about.
Right.
It could be that, you know, there's a specific group of individuals that really the media is directing their message towards.
Yes.
Just because they're the ones paying for it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if that's the case, I mean, I don't know that... I feel like then the blame... if we're talking about blame for why the discourse isn't as constructive, maybe, as we would like it, is it falls on all of us. I mean, it falls on the system, it falls on the people, it falls on the politicians, the media.
Yeah.
And maybe what's necessary is, I don't know, if someone to stand up and stand out. But I mean, like,
yeah.
if they were to do that, how, like, what microphones are they going to use? Right?
Yes, yeah. I think it is difficult. I mean, not to take any sides, but just as an example, you know, Hillary Clinton, over her career, has tried to talk about love and kindness in politics. And when she first brought it up, way back, I think in the early 90s, she was just completely ridiculed and sort of slapped down, you know. And so I think it is hard to try and change the discourse.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I've wondered is if we focus more on values rather than beliefs and behaviors, whether we would then find more in common with other people. Because our kind of core values can often motivate very different behaviors and beliefs even.
Oh, yeah.
But if you sort of drop down to, well, at bottom though, what's motivating this person, often we can find more similarities.
Well, I think generally are really similar to each other. So it's like pretty much people have basic needs for, you know, food and, you know, shelter, protection, or like love and stuff like that, or expression.
Want good things for
their kids, stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, education, you know, health, stuff like that. So, and everybody wants like a good life and, you know, good society, safe and protected, all that stuff. So I think like when we have like a problem, it's easier to blame the external stuff or be like, there's something outside that's wrong, and then if we change that, everything will be fine. But that's not the case. I can speak up personally because I was like when I moved to US, I'm thinking every one of my problems will be solved because it'll be a completely different country and I'll have like completely different like environment and people to interact with. But what happens is that I bring myself with me. So I'm wherever I go. Yeah, so the problems I have, I will still face. I have to like solve it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah
but it's easy to think that if you change other things and your problem will be solved.
So it's become kind of a truism, but it is, we have to start with ourselves, basically.
Yeah.
Did you have any final thoughts on the whole values thing?
It's possible. I don't know. There's a book by George Lakoff, I think that's his name, talking about like moral politics.
Right.
And basically he kind of splits society up into these two camps. One that adheres to kind of a strict father morality, and one that adheres to a more nurturing parent morality.
Yeah.
And so I think, I mean, even I guess taking that as like a truth, which might not necessarily be the case, I think there's still definitely room for conversation not to happen, because you're essentially talking past one another.
Right.
You know, you might be saying things that the other person agrees with to a point, and basically there's a filtering process that goes on in your brain that, you know, the information that you like is able to kind of come in and resonate, and the information that doesn't really kind of bounces off.
Yeah.
What's really necessary, I think, is looking at it from the other person's perspective.
Right, yes.
And really trying to put yourself in their shoes and look at things from their sets of values, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's not only talking about values, it's entertaining the possibility that you're wrong and that there's an alternative way to look at a situation.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for your views. I really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and our topic discussion this week. We're going to a break now, but I'll be back with more conversation after these messages.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made dessert in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Can you imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
I'm Casey, and I'm the second-generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years.
Listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. And It's a Question of Balance has a topic hour and a guested hour. Right now we're featuring out and about, thought-provoking conversations on the street. And if you want to give your comments, you can email me, ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. Always interested to hear your thoughts. Well, last today I spoke with Joe, so let's hear his thoughts.
Hello,
Hi, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thanks for agreeing to be interviewed. What is your name?
My name is Joe.
Well, thanks for stopping, Joe, for the Out and About feature. This week we're considering, does it have to be them and us? There's lots of ways we can find ourselves thinking in terms of them and us. Young and old, rich and poor, healthy versus not taking care of yourself, right-wing, liberal, you know, gay, straight, black, white. I'm wondering, do you ever find yourself feeling very different from a certain group of people and feeling a sense of them and us?
It's a hard question. So I'm a cultural sociologist.
Okay.
And so this is exactly what I study professionally.
Okay. Right.
And it's also being an American during a presidential election can make it feel very them and us.
Yes, yeah.
And it's hard to say. When you see someone like Donald Trump who ascends to this level of attention, it's hard to believe that other people would support that, but this person is obviously out there in the world and is supported by a lot of people. And I think it gives you a sense, maybe not so much of them and us, but as much as how big this country is and how much diversity you get when you move outside of your familiar kind of comfort zones.
Yes. Yeah. In an article by Robert W. Peck of the Constitution Party, he states, in a world with an us and versus them mentality, it's always them that are the problem. We're never the cause of our own troubles. That would be unthinkable. It's always the other guy who fouls everything up. And you mentioned the political arena. It seems particularly in that arena, it's sort of like, if only we, whoever what the we is, were, you know, in power, in charge, everything would be utopian. What is the appeal, do you think, of this them and us mentality?
The appeal.
Do you think it? I mean, one thing I wondered was whether it's just the simplicity of it. It allows us to ignore complexity. You know, it also tends to sort of dehumanize the them, so it makes it easier to not agree with them and just to discount. I don't know whether you would think any of those things apply.
Yeah, I think when we think about the way we talk to each other, right? The discourse of American politics, it is very binary, right? The other group is the wrong group, and we are the right group. And I think it's not so appealing as much as it feels natural, right? It feels natural to assume that we are the right people. So if you look at studies of drivers, for example, every driver in America thinks they drive better than most other drivers on the road, which is statistically impossible, right?
Right.
And so there's always this perception that you are the right one, and, you know, a car is a good instance of a binary relationship where you're inside the car, you're outside of the car, right? And so it's us are those inside the car, and them is everybody outside. So when you're in a traffic jam, something like a road rage will be much more likely because you have this very black and white view of the world. And that's the nature of American politics, so we're used to talking that way, but when we start identifying that way is when we have problems, when we assume that a black and white relationship applies to human nature, right?
Yes,
so that we can covet up that easily.
I'm wondering if part of what gets lost when we're in a them and us mindset, particularly in a political arena, is that the whole point is supposed to be progress. It's not supposed to be victory. And yet we see a kind of dominating attitude of almost wanting to, the energy goes on converting other people to our belief system rather than concentrating energy on how actual progress could be affected. I mean, is that something you see within this whole sort of them and us thing?
Yeah, it's interesting because what you're talking about is, you know, the the movement from pragmatism to idealism, that we've become a very idealistic country, the more that we need to be practical, I think. You know, I think the recession was a sign that we need to become much more practical in how we divvy up power and how we divvy up material things in this country. But instead, we've kind of hunkered down with our idealism and said, you know, if only we get our extreme candidate in place, can we have this utopia that we're imagining? And that's where we get people like Cruz and Trump who ascend for various reasons, because they are giving that utopian vision, as dystopic as it is to most other people. It promises a better world for people who have been recently disempowered, which is the white working class.
Right, yes. One thing a topic I've considered on the show before is, I'm a dual citizen in Britain and America, so I have noticed that in America, we tend to embody our political beliefs by sort of saying, I am a Democrat or a liberal or a conservative, whereas in Britain, we would say, I support the conservatives, or I'm going to vote Labour. And that to me seemed significant because it makes it sort of who you are, you know, it's very personal, and so any difference almost feels like a criticism of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that could be contributing in any way to the more of the them and us feeling? You know, because
yeah, I think that's that sort of a feeling of naturalness, right? It's about identity, and I identify with these people rather than I support the beliefs that they're putting out there, right? So in the European context that you're talking about, where you have a parliamentary representation, you have representation from across the spectrum. You'll have, you know, you'll have conservatives, but you'll also have very far right people. You'll possibly have an anarchist party in place, or a pirate party, as they have in Sweden. And it gives you a diversity of opinions that you can pick from, and it's like a menu of options rather than having to, from the start, identify as one kind of person or another. And when you've got both a strong identification and a two-party system, it's very hyperbolic, because you're either one or the other, and there's not a lot of room for Greens. There's no Communist Party. We've got one independent senator who happens to be running for president, which is very strange, but is also very exciting to so many people. And that's the reason why it looks like a race between an independent independent senator and a non-politician, right, a businessman, that the American people are kind of asking for something different, something in the gray area, maybe, that hasn't been, you know, Coke or Pepsi, as we've had as political parties for the last 40 years.
Right, yes, yeah. One of the things I wonder might help with allowing more complexity, or tolerating more complexity of views, is if we looked more at people's values rather than their beliefs and behaviors, because, you know, sometimes a similar value can give rise to very different beliefs and behaviors.
Right. Absolutely.
But if we can drop down and sort of try and see, well, what motivated them to suggest that particular policy or to behave in that way, maybe we can find some common ground that doesn't appear possible if you go to the higher level. Is that something you've ever considered?
Absolutely. Yeah. As, you know, part of my work and what I study is culture and how we interpret things and how we make meaning out of the world, and then through that process how we assign value, because we may have values, say, about family, but what family values means will look very differently in a different cultural context, where family is, you know, maybe not patriarchal, or maybe where a family is you know, not heteronormative, where there's other kinds of definitions of family, and so we go seeking those things in the world. But, you know, we could say those are all family values, but how family gets interpreted in a particular time and place is going to change those things.
I mean, the world is becoming smaller and smaller, and we're sort of seeing a globalization, not just in business, but in terms of movement of people. And there is being quite a large pushback against that all around the world. You know, I mean, in America, the, you know, talk of building the wall with Mexico. In Europe, you know, there's a problem with all the migrants coming from these war-torn countries, and even within the EU, of just not wanting certain European countries that are far, you know, less economically affluent to be coming to the other countries. So there's this sort of tension between how the world seems to be wanting or needing or is just becoming more global, and people defending their, you know, experience of the world as it's always been. How do you see that sort of playing out? Do you think, I mean, it, I guess you go back, sort of there's the tribal feeling of, like, you know, people want to feel in a certain small community, but do you think it, we can get a sense of a global community, or would it take a, like, an alien attack for us to feel that?
I hope not, because I don't know if we would survive that.
No, exactly.
I don't know. I think that's an interesting question, and it's something that, if you're optimistic, I think a lot of us hope that there is a, something called human nature, and we can hold on to that and figure out what that looks like.
Like a common humanity?
Exactly. Right? A common denominator for us. And I am optimistic. I believe that something like, you know, love, if we can find a way to interpret that universally, would be a rallying force. But it's very difficult, because we have a lot of really sinister forces today, right? Groups, people that are seeking power, ideologies that are not conducive to getting along. They're ideologies that want to dominate before the human element even comes into play. And so it's worrisome, and it's a great reason to be talking to people, especially, you know, people from other places, and, you know, make new friends and appreciate that when we, the things that we like about globalization, which are cheaper things and exotic things and the ability to move more fluidly, we need to appreciate that that's a social activity, and we need to include other people in that process. So when we go visit a place, we need to appreciate that those people would also like to visit where we're from,
right?
And we need to make it possible for that to happen, because it's a much more interesting interesting world when we can all visit each other and not feel like escaping places where no one wants to go or be. And we need to accept that in order to get those cheap things or those exotic things, we need to appreciate that there's a human element that makes those things possible. And that that labor needs to be respected, and those people need to have their own desires and their own wants respected, and not simply economics or political clout to dictate those things.
And perhaps an understanding that just because somebody holds a different belief or view or is just different, it doesn't need to change who we are. I mean, that seems to be, there seems to be a fear around having to be like the other in some way, you know, and that's the defense against it. But just to even, you can just respect or even get to the point of enjoying the difference, you know.
I think, you know, maybe there's something to the changing of the family as well, which is back in the day, you know, we'd always gripe about going to Thanksgiving dinner in the States because you'd have, you know, a racist uncle and a hippie aunt and everyone sitting at the same table. And that used to be something we would endure. And we may gripe about it, but we'd think secretly, like, this is my family and we'd love it, right? Whereas now the family has changed and you've got so much, you know, focus on the individual that everyone has their own appliance. Everyone has their own, you know, pair of headphones, their own TV, their own screen to look at, that it promotes, I think, a sense of detachment and a sense that we can all have it our own way. And that's a nice idea in certain contexts, but I think in a material world where things, resources are limited, space is limited, that losing the ability to accept difference at the same time that we're sharing things, I think that's problematic, and we need to find ways to appreciate that we all have our own wants, and we need to find ways to share those wants and appreciate that because one person wants something doesn't mean I need to want it. And because I desire something doesn't mean I necessarily get it. I don't deserve it. I shouldn't be able to get whatever I want just because I want. And a system that, that is maybe organized top-down based on that principle is probably not the best system for us to be following.
Right. Yes. Yeah, that's a good point. Well, thank you so much for your opinions.
Great to meet you, Ruth.
Thank you.
Take care.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. Thank you very much to all the people who took part in the On the Street conversations this week. And the purpose of the topic hour is to try and ask questions that make us think. So I hope that might have been your experience listening today. And as I've mentioned through the show, we have a topic hour and a guest hour. So be sure to tune in to hear inspiring, in-depth interviews with guests from the arts, as well as thought-provoking topic discussions on the street. And remember, you can check out the website for podcasts of all previous shows to listen to anytime, anywhere. That's itsaquestionofbalance.com. Itsaquestionofbalance.com. I do encourage you to visit and take a look. Thanks for listening. I look forward to you joining me again for the next show.